Welcome to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes. You're listening to Alternative Talk, AM 1150. On this show before winter solstice, so we are approaching the shortest day of the year coming up, and it sure feels like it here in Seattle. I can't believe how dark it is, how early it's just dark, and then it gets so dark early in the day, and it's a good time to reflect on the natural cycle of life and death and going within in the winter and all that awesome stuff. So happy solstice, everybody. Eric?
Yes.
Happy solstice
to you. Happy holidays. You. Happy Hanukkah. Christmas is coming up. New Year's. All that great stuff.
All of it. Yeah, looking forward to it. It's a great day to take your dog for a walk, even though it gets so dark so early.
Yeah. Well, if you can make it out in the daylight, that's great. But if not, you know, if you live in the city, it's pretty well lit, even at night. So,
yeah.
You know.
Always a good day. The point being, of course, always a good day to get your dog out for a walk and even go somewhere new. New scents, especially new sights, new sounds, good for them. Mental and physical stimulation, super important.
Get them away from the tree for a few minutes if you can, too.
Yeah, right.
They might be obsessing over that.
Well, speaking of mental stimulation, I was able to schedule an interview kind of last minute because we were contemplating either the very beginning of next year or this week, and the authors were available, and I'm so excited to talk with John Pilley and his daughter, Deb Pilley Bianchi. I hope I'm pronouncing your last names right, you two. Authors of the book called Chaser, Unlocking the Genius of the Dog Who Knows 1,000 Words. And of course, Chaser is their John's border collie, female border collie, who he has taught successfully over 1,000 words to. So John and Deb, welcome to the dog show.
Thank you.
All
right, good. I have you both with me. So, I have been reading this. It's such a good book, and I'm so excited to finish it. I have not finished it, but it's loaded, loaded with a lot of information, and I love how balanced it is, you know, really sharing so much of, John, your personal experience and your family's personal experience with your very lucky, by the way, family dogs over the years. You know, starting back with dogs you had when you were younger, when your kids were younger, and talking about Yasha, who was such a huge inspiration for you and probably partially responsible for the work that you're doing now or that you have done with Chaser. Really nicely balanced with that sort of personal story and reflection and personal experience, and then also your professional perspective as a professor of psychology and scientist. So really, really, really great book. If you are looking for a great gift for a dog-loving friend or family member, I definitely recommend this book. It's great. It's called Chaser, Unlocking the Genius of the Dog Who Knows 1,000 Words. So I look forward to talking to you about some of these points that jumped out at me. And it's just loaded. I mean, I think I probably could have interviewed you after reading maybe the first 10 pages because it was just so loaded with information about her. Now, first, is Chaser with you, John, right now?
Chaser is. She's with us.
Excellent. And is she in the room, in the same room as you?
Yes.
All right.
24/7.
All right. Good. Now, you have taught this dog 1,022 words. Is that right?
Well, we've taught her over 1,000, yes, of proper noun words.
Okay.
But we've also taught her common nouns, verbs, adverbs. But, yes, our goal has been to discover whether or not the dog has the ability to learn simple elements of grammar.
Mm.
And to learn elements of grammar, there has to be a vocabulary. And that's one reason we spent so much time in the first 3 years teaching her so many words, testing to see if she had a memory system. If you're going to learn a language, you need to have a memory system. And we've been very happy, exuberant, to discover that Chaser's representing all dogs is smarter than we think.
Mm. Boy, I can't tell you how many times I've said over the years that dogs don't get enough credit in general. And this is a great example of that. And, in reading you talking about kind of, really thinking in depth about this conversation and what all of this means. And, I think it's interesting because I don't know if you know about me, but my expertise is in dog training and behavior with pet dogs. So I work with people and their pet dogs in the greater Seattle area and have been doing so for the last 12 years. And, it impresses me continually how dogs really don't get enough credit for their level of awareness of what all is going on and their level of understanding about what all is going on. And, sometimes I think they're very, very much underestimated. And one of the things, because my job is to teach people to communicate, how to communicate with their dogs, is that I'm talking a lot about, well, what is the dog's language? Because it's really, not verbal. They're vocal and a lot of other ways that they communicate. But I think one of the things that you talked about in the beginning of your book was that, really just defining language. You said in one of the parts of the book, you said the match to sample method was not the best starting point for teaching Yasha, one of your old dogs, the names of objects, because you failed to incorporate Yasha's language training into our playful interactions. As I had all of his prior training, I certainly wasn't taking good advantage of his social intelligence. That had to be a critical mistake because language is inherently a social activity. And I thought that was really an interesting statement about speaking to, well, language isn't just, you can't have language without the sort of the intention of communication, which is social. It requires something else. So I thought there's a lot of really interesting thoughts that you have in there about, what is language and then how we are trying to teach dogs our language of words, but it doesn't mean that they don't have the ability to understand language. It's just in a different way. Does that make sense?
If I might add one thing that was so key with Dad in teaching Chaser and his failures to teach Yasha human language. Now, Yasha could, a lot of dogs can do behaviors, but to actually crack the code and teaching them nouns was sort of very gray, fuzzy area where we would believe dogs understand things, certain things. We know that our dog knows. When we say we're going to the vet, your dog knows where you're going. And so many people have had to resort to actually spelling those kind of words out between bath and vet. Mm-hmm. And that's because these words had value to them. Mm-hmm. So in order to make language learning possible, the words had to have value. And in teaching Yasha basic nouns like rope or telephone, he had no association with those words. They didn't mean anything. And so that was Dad's aha moment, is that these words needed to have meaning. And that's how he taught Chaser, was through play with her toys.
Which is what would motivate her to really care, because playing is so fun. And that was just such a common theme throughout the book, which I so appreciate and hope people really take into their homes with their own dogs. And there's so much research going on now more and more about play and how powerful, play is with animals socially and how important it is and how valuable it is of an interaction. And clearly in this case, it was really what enabled you to, motivate the dogs to stay in the work, and because they were like, okay, this is fun. So yes, I will learn this. You talked about, again, throughout the book, it's all over the place about play, and I so appreciate this. You said, we all learn better and faster when learning is fun. And I mean, I'm no exception to that. I do my best work when I'm having fun and at ease. And so in figuring that out with Chaser, it's kind of an interesting question about separating a dog's ability to learn with their motivation to learn, and that those two things maybe aren't separate. Like, because it's like there's a conversation about, well, Does the dog's brain have the ability to learn this many words versus is the dog motivated to learn this many words? And, you know, kind of like, well, where's that line in separating the two things?
Well, that was the initial question is how can we teach the dog the word? And as Debbie's implied a little bit earlier, the words have to have value. But before the words can have value, the objects have value. So we looked out by using a ball and inciting the little puppy to chase the ball. And as Chaser chased the ball, that ball took on value because it permitted the little puppy to emit an inborn instinct. And once the object took on value, then the name of the object began to take on value. And that was the key to leading her finally to the point where about the fifth or sixth month, she had the aha moment. It was kind of like a Helen Keller moment.
Mm.
There was this awareness that objects have names, and also awareness that the cues that I gave her when I said this is, that enabled her to associate that particular word with a particular object.
It's really incredible. Now, what is it like? Now, you've said that I saw a clip on television of you demonstrating this, and this was a while ago. This was before I received the book, where you have, you know, this mound of stuffed animals and objects and all these different toys, and they all have a name written on them. And I mean, I just think coming up with all the names would have been so hard to do. And it's, you know, get this and get that, and she did it and did it and did it and did it over and over again. But I'm curious to hear about, you know, these other types of words that you've taught, and just in your work with Chaser and in your research, and then in living with her, what is your sense for her ability to understand language, as far as you know, our words? Like, so you've taught, she's learned now proper nouns, verb, you know, all these different types of words. So how are you able to string them together, or how closely are you able to use those words? You know, how would you compare it to how humans use words with each other, I guess, is my question.
Well, excellent question. There has to be ABC learning. Children cannot begin to really expand their language learning until they learn their ABCs. Now, they can learn words before that, but it really jumps when they learn those early ABCs. Well, what are the ABCs for a child or for dogs?
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the questions that we ask and try to give an answer to. Before the dog could learn proper nouns or common nouns, Chaser first needed to learn verbs. Simple verbs like here, there, stand, stay, come, good dog. Once those verbs were learned, that we can call that A. Then we could proceed. Because she had those verbs in her head, then we could proceed to go to proper nouns. And so once she learned proper nouns, now we'll call that B as another step. It was possible to move ahead and teach her common nouns. Now, common nouns are vastly different from proper nouns. Common nouns are are learned only through inference. There's no way for us to teach that. The dog has to, like a child, to make a mental inference in order to learn a common noun.
Can you give an example of that for listeners?
Well, Chaser learned many common nouns, not as extensive as proper nouns, but the teaching of a common noun required that she learn that the objects that she learned the name of were toys.
Mm.
Now, Chaser had her toys, but we also had similar objects in the home that we told Chaser belonged to family members. And so I would put some object down very similar to the toys that she had and say, this is Sally's, no play. Well, we were happy to find that Chaser learned that any object for which she had learned the name was a toy with which she could play, as opposed to similar objects that belonged to family, but with which she could not play. Now,
so she learned, yes, that the toys were actually toys. These objects were all toys.
Okay. Yes, that's also a toy, but it's not yours.
Right. Mm-hmm. She and his dad was saying she also learned, for instance, frisbees. With her, she has over 30 frisbees, and she learned that anything that was flying through the air and was a saucer shape is a frisbee.
So it's almost like categories of things. Like,
that's exactly what they are: sticks, okay, trees, balls.
Hmm.
Those are all objects where you can actually, Chaser made the leap, and like my father's saying, the inference, which something had to click in her head, and she's like, this is one of these. Mm. So that if he would tell her to go to a tree and show her that an object was a tree, she understood that's a tree, and then you can tell her to go to another tree, and she'll go to another tree, find another tree. The same with sticks. For instance, she loves to carry sticks in her mouth on walks. So organically, this is how Dad and my mom taught Chaser the names of things, was through repetition, and she's always listening, and your dog is always paying attention.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
you know,
sure.
We're not paying attention to them.
Yeah.
But through that, you know, he was able to teach her find a bigger stick, find a little stick, so that she understood how to integrate adjectives.
Wow. It's just
it's amazing how all of the different types of words seem to almost come automatically. Once she learned a verb, then like walk or run, once she learned the verb, we could use an adverb to qualify that movement. Slow,
mm-hmm,
step, faster. So those are adverbs that help to qualify the particular behavior that she's emitting. So what I'm trying to say is that for some, it's almost magical that once the learning starts, that
it's snowball.
The door is open.
Yeah.
To learn different kinds of words,
yeah,
which of course are necessary before there can be learning any elements of grammar.
It almost seems like there's, like, you know, we're talking about the words and the different types of words and what they are and how they're different, and that she's learned that type and that type and that type and that type. It almost seems to me too that she got, as part of this process, almost that there was a level of communication that she got about it too. Like, now that you're talking about, you know, show me a tree, or, you know, walk slowly versus just walk, or, you know, where you're really qualifying and refining the language, again, which is a social phenomenon, that it really speaks to their ability to, I mean, yes, through words, but I think, you know, my experience with dogs in general is that whether they learn words or not, that they actually do have that awareness or level of consciousness of communication that goes pretty deep. It's just that you've actually now taught this dog the human language of words, and that her ability to her sort of social intelligence, or how, whatever you want to call that, or her ability to communicate with people paired with that is like, I mean, it's almost like you're in a way able to talk to her. I mean, you
good
are,
summary,
right?
That's correct. Well, that's correct. Chaser, it's interesting. It's beautiful to watch my dad and Chaser. And in a lot of ways, she's really like a 2 or 3 year old toddler, because she's, the more that she knows, the more that she listens. Mm-hmm. And she's very attentive to everything he says and everything he does. And he's now working with her with imitation and modeling behavior, which is, but what's so fascinating is that she's constantly paying attention, and she's constantly learning. I actually lost my train of thought where I was going with this. but it's, his research has confirmed what everybody has always thought, that your dog is smarter than you think. And the fact that we haven't actually stopped to train or teach our dogs with anything you learn, whether it's piano playing or the guitar or math, you have to work at it.
Yeah.
And you have to go step by step. And you can't go to step B without going to step A, like Dad was saying earlier. And the fact that he's done that now, it just busts communication with our animals wide open.
Yeah. All right. Hold that thought, because we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and talk more. We have John Pilley and his daughter, Deb Pilley Bianchi, who wrote a book called Chaser, Unlocking the Genius of the Dog Who Knows a Thousand Words. And Chaser is their border collie, who they have taught well over 1,000 words to, and continue to work with her in language. It's really incredible. This book is a great read. It's personal. It's moving. It's so informative. It's so interesting and thought-provoking. Great holiday gift idea for a dog lover in your life. It's called Chaser, Unlocking the Genius of the Dog Who Knows 1,000 Words. We'll be back in just a few minutes. You're listening to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes.
Get off your sled and go to bed. Don't you ever tire. Throw a bone, I'm finally home. Curled up by the fire. Snow is falling from the sky like ashes from an urn. Sweet dreams, my little one. Now it's my turn.
Wish your dog didn't hate going to the vet? Wish you were welcomed by a team who cared? Jet City Animal Clinic is an enjoyable respite from the same old thing. Dr. Anderson and her team have created a full-service facility that combines veterinary expertise with a comfortable style. Jet City Animal Clinic is located in Seattle's Capitol Hill neighborhood on 12th Avenue across from Seattle U. Bring your crazy questions, odd ideas, and alternative thinking. Jet City Animal Clinic will work with you to keep your furry family members healthy and happy. Traditionally educated with an open mind, call us at 206-329-0253 or email info@jetcityanimalclinic.com to make an appointment. Jet City Animal Clinic, a unique approach to the health care of your urban pet, a local family practice. JetCityAnimalClinic.com.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to animal communicator and medium Darcy Pariso, we cover the world of animals. This week, December 21st, it's our annual Christmas show with harmonic energy shifters Jude and Paul Ponton in the studio, along with their acutonic forks, Tibetan bowls, pua, rattle, and bells. Open phone lines so you can call in for a free session with them. We'll, of course, celebrate with the Jingle Cats and sing some animal Christmas carols. Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
This is Julie Forbes, dog training, behavior, and nutrition specialist and owner of Sensitive Dog. Thoughtful guidance for you and your dog. If your dog needs basic obedience training, a behavior evaluation, or food consultation, I can help you. Call me at 206-372-7399 or visit my website, www.sensitivedog.com. I teach group obedience classes, in-home lessons, and evaluations, and a two-week intensive training program called Higher Education. Again, I'm Julie Forbes, Seattle's dog behavior training and nutrition specialist. www.sensitivedog.com. Pure Air's powerful formula lets you eliminate pet odors safely. It's strong enough to effectively get rid of smells like urine, plus stronger odors like those that can be caused by illness. Pure Air is safe enough to spray directly onto people, animals, or use in the bath or laundry. Pure Air is perfect for dealing with dire situations, refreshing your dog between baths, or just before company comes. Pure Air is the most effective product you can buy to remove stinky pet odors safely. Find it at stores like Mud Bay, McClendon's, and Natural Pet Pantry, or visit their website, pureair.com. That's pure, A-Y-R-E.com. I'm Julie Forbes, host of The Dog Show. Pure Air is the only odor eliminator you'll find in my home. You'll love it.
No other station brings you this much variety. Welcome to Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Well, Christmas is going to the dogs. We'd rather have chew toys than you rot.
Welcome back to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes. You're listening to Alternative Talk, AM 1150. We're back talking with John Pilley, who's the author of a book called Chaser, and his daughter, Deb, who is a music producer, is that right, and writer? That's cool.
That's correct.
Who contributed to the writing of this book as well. John is, the book is called Chaser, Unlocking the Genius of the Dog Who Knows a Thousand Words. It's an excellent book, great holiday gift for the dog lover in your life. This book is really well balanced. It's personal, it's very educational, it's pretty darn mind-blowing, and a really cool story of what is possible in the relationship between human and dog. And we entered into this break sort of acknowledging the power of, you know, intention, and that this, you know, this book exists and this information exists, and this really, really important work, John, that you've done with your dogs over the years, and how much insight it gives us into their potential and their ability really to communicate, and their understanding of language and of us and of themselves and of the world, and that it took doing it. You know, and Deb, you made a really great point of, you know, it's about giving the dog the opportunity and being present to her in a way to give her the opportunity to have these breakthroughs and learn, you know, over a thousand, well over a thousand words of different types, not just verbs or nouns, but she's actually stringing words together now. And it feels like, to some degree at least, that you're really able to talk to her now in a way that she understands, like, show me the tree, Chaser. And she's like, there's the tree. And shows you. I mean, she doesn't say that back, obviously, but she acknowledges that she understands the language. And that, gosh, if this dog can do that when you're, you know, looking at your own dog at home, think about what sort of potential is not unlocked in your own dog, and how much, if you just have the presence and the attention to help them be what they can be. So important, you know, especially with all the dogs that end up in shelters or rescue groups or whatever.
Yes, absolutely.
Just giving them the opportunity to understand what it is that we mean and to kind of take some responsibility to learn how to communicate that in a way that's going to work for the dog. Because even John, you know, you've just accomplished this incredible body of work with dogs. You know, you talk about dogs that you had before Chaser and the work that you were doing for many, many years that led up to this, and that your, you know, the adjustments that you had to make along the way to make yourself better at communicating with the dog so that the dog would get it. And that's such an important piece, I think, for us to get, you know, as a whole, just talking about kind of the human dog relationship and how, you know, it is our responsibility. And like, if the dog doesn't get it, then figure out what you need to adjust so that the dog does get it. It's not necessarily that the dog can't get it. It's just that they're not getting it. So what's wrong? What do we need to adjust? And one of the biggest things for, in John's case, was figuring out play. So go ahead. You were about to say something?
I am. Well, thanks for mentioning the social nature of the dog. It's amazing. Humans and dogs have co-evolved for thousands of years. And out of all of the creatures, it's the dog, even more than the chimps and the dolphins, that has that propensity to be able to live with us as humans. Ryan Hare points out when he talks about the chimps that they don't have that "I love you, I want to be with you" attitude. It's more like, well, what can I do to get that morsel? What can I do for the food now? But the dogs, as Brian Hare beautifully talked about, the dogs want to be with us.
They want to please.
And we open the door when we let them emit their instincts. That is so powerful.
Yeah, and one of the things that, you know, I've talked, which you just mentioned, you know, dogs and people have been living together for thousands of years. I've heard lots of numbers thrown out there. It seems like the most common numbers that I've heard are somewhere around 15,000 years and somewhere around 30,000 years are the most widely accepted among scientists anyway. It seems that's,
true.
You know, that's how long dogs and people have been living together. So let's be conservative and say 15,000 years. Well, that's a long time. I mean, think, you know, take a second and just think about 15,000 years. Dogs and people have been living together, and the nature of the relationship, for the most part, up until very recently, has been working together to some capacity. And it's just really something unique that our two species share, that we have kind of come together in this world. I'm pretty convinced personally that we wouldn't be as successful as humans without the partnership of dogs. If you think about, I mean, livestock management just as one point, and you talk a lot in the book, John, about your relationship with herding, the herding community, which I personally appreciate because I'm involved with, not as a herder, but in promotion and also in hosting the question and answer panel of the herding trainers at the Vashon Sheepdog Trials here in Washington State, just west of Seattle. And, you know, when I promote this event every year, I get to have a really, really wonderful, thought-provoking conversation with somebody who is a herding champion, you know, is an expert in herding and has worked with herding dogs for years and years. And, you know, you just watch these dogs work and you watch the partnership. It's really something beautiful to see, and to see the dogs sort of balancing that listening and also working and sort of troubleshooting themselves. And there's a really great element in your book about that. Anyway, so just that thing, like talking about that nature of that relationship, working together. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, the question about love is an interesting one, because I know now, you know, more than ever, and really just particularly recently, it's even widely accepted among scientists that animals even have emotions. I mean, for a long time, they were like, nope, just humans. And now it's actually right. like, well, no, actually, you know, we're, you know, looking at the brain and the different areas of the brains that light up, and they all kind of look the same.
You know, and if one thing that Dad also brings up in his book was, it was Descartes, the 17th century philosopher, that really set the bar low for expectation and coming up with the paradigm that dogs are nothing but machines with blood, because he found them incapable of mental processes. And so he kind of set the relationship and the evolution of our canine intelligence, our perception of canine intelligence, just back hundreds and hundreds of years. And it seems like it's just really in the past 10 years or past 30 years that people are waking up, yes, and understanding that dogs do have emotions, and especially with the MRIs and Gregory Burns' work, and also the work over in at the Planck Institute, you know, all the amazing things that they're doing with finding out with the way that canine brain works. Isn't that correct, Dad?
Correct, yes.
You talked, John, in the book about creative teaching, that really, you know, ultimately is highly dependent on the relationship between the learner and the teacher. And I thought that was a great, I mean, this sort of theme is really throughout the book as well. You talk about, again, I think at the very end, you talk about fundamentally, as I hope this book has shown, there's one thing you must do to explore learning through play with a dog or other animal, and that is respect the other mind involved with you in the process. Remember that communication is a two-way street, and allow for that other mind to influence you and your behavior. And when I read that, communication is a two-way street, I was like, ah, because I said that exact sentence to my clients over and over and over again, because they're like, sit, 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 sit. You know, and the dog's like, ugh, go away, you know, like... Just that's irritating. What an irritating way to be communicated with. Imagine if somebody was asking you to do something in that manner, and remembering that you're asking this other animal who has their whole world and thought process and feelings and preferences and, you know, all this stuff to do what you've asked them to do, but for them to do it under their own power and to just slow down for one. That's where we start a lot of the time. Slow down. Like, let the dog have a thought process, give them time and space to even have a thought process in the first place, rather than just like, bah, 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 bah.
You know, you bring up such a great point, and I found this very interesting when I started watching my dad work with Chaser, and because sometimes he'll ask her to bring something, you know, and she balks. She doesn't do it. And I'm thinking, wow, why doesn't she do it? And he kind of, and then you see that he's sort of okay with that, and he plays with her a little bit. And finally I was asking, well, why do you do that? She's not always obedient. And he said, well, because she has to get her way sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, it's, why should I always get my way?
Yeah, they're not robots.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so he engages and lets her do what she wants to do for a little while, you know, as far as like playing, you know, keep away.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. Then she does exactly what he asks her to do.
Yeah. I think that brings up such a great point about, you know, the dogs. I think that the dogs really appreciate, and one, I mean, are aware of, in the first place, and appreciate when they are being respected. And this was something that I've thought of. And you talk early in the book about the other dogs that your family has had. And two of those dogs were huskies. And my experience with huskies, if I were to generalize, so of course I'm making a generalization, but it's kind of what I've found to be true, is that huskies really, really do not take well to being disrespected. Like, they'll just be like, oh, you're, like, you think I'm going to work for you now? That, you know, like, you're not, you know? Like they'll be like, and I think one of the things you said is that those two were so great at pretending like they didn't hear or like ignoring, especially good at pretending like they didn't hear what you just asked them to do. But over the years, I think that, you know, in general, working with dogs, like as a philosophy, you know, being respectful of them as the animals that they are and honoring them. This was another thing you said that I appreciated was, you know, every dog is a unique individual, regardless of breed. You know, I mean, there are certainly generalizations we can make based off of breed and genetics. But then even within that, every dog is a unique individual. Chaser is different from other dogs in her litter, you know, personality and all that kind of stuff. And really knowing who you're working with as an individual and honoring and respecting that dog and what gives that dog value to this or that might be different based off of the dog, you know. There's a lot of really important points that you make really clearly in this book that you can apply really to working with dogs in general, which I think is so important, which is why this is one of the reasons why this is such a great book.
Well, I think there's also examples, Dad, when you, with the dog that came before Chaser was Yasha, who was half Border Collie Shepherd mix, and he was very gregarious and outgoing and had a very sort of passionate personality. And, Dad, when you got Chaser, she had a very different temperament, didn't she?
That's true. Some dogs are hard dogs. Some dogs are soft dogs. Hard dogs takes a little bit more of a stringent approach. Soft dog needs very little correction. But a point that I'd like to point out, too, relative to children and dogs, I wish I'd learned this earlier in my life, but students or children are not vessels to be filled. Rather, they are lanterns to be lit.
Mm.
And I try in my head from time to time to see how I can apply this more and more with Chaser. And what that consists of is putting her into novel situations, giving her an opportunity to try to solve a problem, which enlargens her repertoire.
Yeah, I just love that approach. 'Cause it sort of brings into the conversation the essence of an individual and working with that, you know, rather than just thinking of the more sterile, you know, you learn this and you learn that versus like, well, what inspires you? Because it's awfully powerful to be inspired, as we can see from the work that you've done, you know, was inspired. I mean, this was inspired work. And now look what you've accomplished. It's really incredible. This dog has learned well over 1,000 words. She's a border collie. Are you seeing people doing this with other types of dogs? I mean, I'm really curious to see this done with more dogs. You know, I know like we've mentioned Brian Hare a few times, and he has his website Dognition, which is really a really great thing for you to do if you're interested in engaging your dog's brain and getting to know your dog's thought process a little bit better and burn some mental energy, because remember, dogs have both mental and physical energy and they need an outlet for both of those things. Dognition.com is a great website. But, you know, I'm curious, you know, of course, now you've used a border collie, which, I mean, they're known as, you know, these dogs that are so smart and have such a great work ethic and so incredibly intelligent and all this. You know, I'm really curious. I wish that we could have you do this with lots of other types of dogs and see what your perspective is on that. But based off of the dogs that you have worked with, you know, what is your perspective on work doing this kind of work with other dogs? I mean, Chaser is not some miracle dog, where, not to take anything away from her, but she's one dog out of, you know, millions. And
well, we do not say that the Border Collie is the smartest dog. What we believe is that the social relationship with humans has been kind of programmed in them to be more likely to listen to the farmer.
Right.
If the dog in herding does not keep the eyes on the sheep and does not listen to the farmer, then they have not bred them.
Right.
So the hypothesis is that they've got a little edge here. They're more likely to listen. And what we really encourage is that owners talk to their dogs in very simple language, maybe two words or three words, but talk. Our dogs are listening to us once they find that they're going to be able to play.
Yeah, and just, you know, talking, just the idea of, you know, in doing that, like really just talk to the dog. And I've done this before with my own dogs, just out of kind of curiosity to see what they would do. We have an array of different dogs, dachshund, lab, two Australian cattle dogs, and a mixed breed. So we've got a good variety there. And just talking to them like I was talking to a human, just kind of telling them about this client or that, what, you know, whatever. And they really love it. They're like, you know, especially the cattle dogs, because they're so intense about everything. And they're like, huh, really? You know? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Tell me more about that. You know, and they really love just being, you know, interacted with in that way, and like being present to them in that way, as opposed to just, you know, going about my life with the dogs there, but not really tuning into them. And the dogs know when they're being tuned into and when they're not, and they so love it. But yeah, your point ultimately about the herding breeds, and that they're bred to, in their work, to have an ear on the handler and an eye on the sheep, and to be connected to both, as opposed to, for example, like a terrier, where it's like, go into the hole and kill it, you know, basically, right?
Yeah.
So it's a whole different wiring that's going on there. You know, not to say that they're not trainable and all that kind of stuff, but that presents challenges when we're in a conversation about, listen to me, even though there's a squirrel over there.
You know, it's also the same with kids. It's like learning and teaching. One size does not fit all.
Yeah.
You know, there are kids that learn in different ways and that have their own individual geniuses.
Yeah.
You know, and their talents. And all dogs are the same.
Yeah.
It's finding that talent and that spark that really turns your dog on and excites your own dog that you want to tap into.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, just coming back to honoring and celebrating who they are as individuals. I want to take another quick break, and then I want to talk about your website, because you've invited, and the book invites people to, you know, engage with you through the website, which is chasertheBorderCollie.com. So I want to come back and talk about that. And then just wrap up and hear any closing thoughts you might have. So we'll be back in just a few minutes. You're listening to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes.
Bobby wants a puppy dog for Christmas, and I know you plan to bring an electric train. But Bobby,
wish your dog didn't hate going to the vet. Wish you were welcomed by a team who cared. Jet City Animal Clinic is an enjoyable respite from the same old thing. Dr. Anderson and her team have created a full-service facility that combines veterinary expertise with a comfortable style. Jet City Animal Clinic is located in Seattle's Capitol Hill neighborhood on 12th Avenue across from Seattle U. Bring your crazy questions, odd ideas, and alternative thinking. Jet City Animal Clinic will work with you to keep your furry family members healthy and happy. Traditionally educated with an open mind, call us at 206-329-0253 or email info@jetcityanimalclinic.com to make an appointment. Jet City Animal Clinic, a unique approach to the health care of your urban pet, a local family practice. JetCityAnimalClinic.com.
Hey, Dog Show fans. Does something stink in your home or car? Pure Air is a powerful odor eliminator that is the only natural food-grade product in its category. It works on bedding, kennels, litter boxes, urine, vomit, poop, even skunk spray. You know, all the fun smells our pets bring into our home. It's so non-toxic that you can literally eat it, a requirement for our home and our dogs. Spray Pure Air on anything you can put water on and let your nose watch the odor disappear. Ask for Pure Air in stores that specialize in natural, non-toxic products for home. Or visit dogradioshow.com for a link to their website. I'm Julie Forbes, your host of The Dog Show. Pure Air is the only odor eliminator you'll find in my home. You'll love it.
Open your ears. Open your heart. Open your mind. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Bobby wants a puppy dog for Christmas. And that's the only song we hear him sing.
Okay, and we are back with John Pilley and his daughter, Deb Pilley Bianchi, who are the authors of this book called Chaser. Unlocking the Genius of the Dog Who Knows a Thousand Words. Chaser is a border collie, their family's border collie, actually, and John has successfully taught this dog well over a thousand words and is still working on developing her ability to understand the human language of words. And it is just an incredible book. It's personal. You really get into the depth of relationship that he and the family have with their dogs. You know, the work started before Chaser came into their lives, and you know, talking about even the experience of having to say goodbye, and which, by the way, made me cry, and is a really important aspect of life with dogs too, to acknowledge. And then talking about the science behind it and the learning and all this kind of stuff. Such a great book, Chaser. The website is chasertheBorderCollie.com, and we just have a couple minutes left, Deb, but will you tell us what you have going on there?
Sure. We've got some videos of Chaser. We have a trailer for the book. We've got a lot of the international media. Chaser's been published in over 72 countries, not the book, but information about
sure.
Chaser
mm-hmm.
with the media. There's our Instagram and Facebook. We're keeping you up to date with what Chaser's doing and what my dad's doing. It's kind of like a peek into a day of the life of John Pilley and Chaser, which is really quite magical. So
yeah.
You can keep up with us on the website.
Cool. And again, that's chasertheBorderCollie.com. And how old is Chaser now?
She's 10 years old. Physically, but our metaphor for her is she's 10 years old,
mm-hmm.
but our metaphor for her is she's a two-year-old toddler.
Yeah.
Two-year-old toddlers know how to say no. Two-year-old toddlers have this yearning for learning and all of this energy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a good metaphor for most dogs.
Yeah, absolutely. In in understanding your relationship with your dogs and how you've brought together your professional world as a psychology professor and research scientist, and your love and connection, clearly deep, deep connection with your dogs, and how you've brought these two things together and what you've created, what has come out as a result of it, is really incredible. So I thank you as a person in the industry of dog training and behavior and in this conversation of communication and learning. What you've contributed is incredible, you and Chaser and your other dogs before that and your family. And what a role model you are for people and how to be with their dogs too. It's, you know, this is about what, you know, what dogs can learn, but really, what kind of life can they have? What kind of quality of life? What's possible in the connection between people and dogs? And what's our responsibility in providing for them so that they have their needs met and that they are stimulated mentally and have a constructive outlet for both their mental and physical energy and are appreciated and honored as the individuals that they are? And it's just really wonderful. I wish we had a ton more time to talk. I could probably be here for the rest of the day talking with you about different aspects of this book. But again, it's called Chaser, Unlocking the Genius of the Dog Who Knows a Thousand Words. I can't recommend this book enough. Great holiday gift for the dog lover in your life. And thanks so much, John and Deb, for your time today. If you've missed any part of this episode or any of our over 300 shows, you can find them all archived on dogradioshow.com and as a free podcast on iTunes. And we'll be back next Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. Thanks for listening.